Support for the Exchange podcast comes from you, our sustaining members, and from New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Fresh off the New Hampshire primary, many Granite Staters will vote again this month in town meetings. Although these gatherings take different forms in different towns, they all represent citizen governance, with residents deciding budgets, projects, and policy matters. And this year, some towns are also talking about carbon taxes, immigration, and rising concerns around rising waters. Today in The Exchange, town meeting in 2020. What issues are at stake in your town? Let us know. Also, the majority of Granite Staters these days do not attend town meeting or deliberative session. If you've never gone, why? And what do you want to know? Join us with an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Peter Basilier, town and school district moderator in Milford. This is his 12th year. Peter, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Good morning.
Also with us, Cordell Johnston, New Hampshire Municipal Association Government Affairs Council and town and school district moderator in his town, Henniker. And Cordell, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Thank you. Good morning, Laura.
And joining us for this segment of our show, Tim Camerato of the Valley News. He will be very busy covering meetings in his region this month. And Tim, welcome back. It's nice to have you, too.
Thank you.
Well, Cordell, to you first, just give us your best two-sentence description from someone from, you know, somewhere else that doesn't do town meeting of how it works, what it is.
How it works. Town meeting, I think this is important for people to understand. Town meeting is the town's local legislative body. And I think people sometimes forget this. You can make an analogy to Congress or to the New Hampshire State Legislature. Those are legislative bodies. And similarly, in a town, the town meeting is the legislative body. If you live in a city, you live in Concord, I think, Laura.
Right, yes.
Your legislative body is the town council or the city council. In a town, and there are 221 towns in this state, the legislative body is the town meeting. So any decisions about spending, adopting ordinances, all of those things that at the state level would be made by the legislature, those are made by the town meeting. So it's not just an event, you know, where you go and vote on stuff. You are actually part of a legislative body.
Well, and that's a great way to describe it. So you basically get to vote on the agenda items, spending, policies, and so forth. And it's great that you clarified too, Cordell, that if you live in Concord, Manchester, Berlin, Franklin, Laconia, other cities, you're not eligible to participate in town meeting because you don't have one. You have
That's
a city
right.
council or a board of aldermen. And,
yeah, you,
and so
you have
forth.
A representative legislative body, whereas if you live in a town, you are the legislative body.
So, Peter, why do we do it this way?
Well, it's historical. From our smallest, earliest days, when we had small communities, the governing body would ask all the voters to come together and provide guidance on what the townspeople wanted to spend their hard-earned tax dollars on. So whether it was from town government or school government. So it goes right back to the earliest days of New Hampshire and how we decided we wanted to govern ourselves when they were small rural communities for the most part.
And why March?
Why March? I think it's mainly because it's mud season, and it's that in-between time that unless you're boiling maple sap into maple syrup, there's not a lot going on. You're about to get ready to farm and to plant and all of that, and so it is a good time of year where we're in between seasons from an agricultural perspective.
Well, and thank you for allowing me to promote Thursday's show. We're going to be looking at maple syrup. So New Hampshire towns have governed themselves this way for a long time, but Cordell, what, 10, 15 years ago, some towns switched to another system called SB2. Just we'll talk about that throughout the hour because it's an ongoing thread in this conversation. But just remind us real quickly what that is. Not everybody in every town will go to that big old meeting and sit there for a couple hours and say yay or nay.
Right. And actually, SB 2 was enacted. It's now been 25 years. It was 1995, I think.
Okay. So it's been a while.
And it's an option that a town can choose. About a third of the towns in New Hampshire have adopted SB 2. And in the traditional town meeting, everyone goes, there are two parts of the town meeting. On the second Tuesday in March, you go and you vote to elect officers and you vote on zoning amendments and stuff like that. And then a few days later, typically, you have the business session where you adopt the budget and you debate and adopt other warrant articles. If a town has adopted SB 2, it sort of reverses the process. And so it has its what would be the open session in advance, and that's usually around the end of January, beginning of February.
Oh, okay, where you discuss the meat of the issue.
You discuss the meat of the issue.
Whether we should buy this fire truck or whether we should adopt this new policy.
Right, and you discuss and debate all those issues, but you don't actually vote on them.
I see.
And then all of those questions go on the ballot. And then on the second Tuesday in March, you go and vote by official ballot on all of those questions.
So you just pop in and vote.
You just go in and vote. And it's done in a voting booth the same way as if you were voting for governor or president or what have you, rather than being at that point debated and voted on the floor of town meeting.
So the idea is if people don't have time to sit there for a couple hours, all day, kind of depends on what's on the agenda, they can at least participate by saying, yes, I support this policy or this budget, or no, I don't.
That's the idea. Whether you think it's a good idea or not is a separate question.
Okay. What do you think about it, Peter?
Well, SB2, which stands for Senate Bill 2, which was the enacting legislation, actually hasn't necessarily gone down that way. Milford is an SB2 town. Deering and Hollis, I know this year, are looking at going to SB2 as well. But in Milford, our town meeting, our town deliberative session this year was 9 hours long.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, really, exactly. We took a break for lunch, and we supported the Dollars for Scholars that way. But yes, aside from a half-hour break, we lasted 9 hours and 40 warrant articles. So it's a misunderstanding if people think that it's necessarily a shorter process than what a classical town meeting was.
So if somebody doesn't have time on that Saturday to sit there for 9 hours, they can at least see what you guys put on the agenda and have a voice that way.
Absolutely. We make
in the voting.
Both the town and the school, for that matter, make a concerted effort to make sure the warrant articles are readily available to the voters and the sessions are recorded so voters can pick it up that way.
Okay, so Tim Camerata with the Valley News. What are some of the typical issues? We'll talk about some of the interesting ones this year, but first off, just what are some of the more typical issues that towns in your region will be talking about this month?
So, I mean, the big ones that come back every year are obviously, the school and town budgets are on every, warrant article.
How much do we want to spend?
Exactly.
And on what?
And then, from there, the big issues that come back year after year are infrastructure spending. Do we want to replace bridges? Do we want to look at culverts this year? How much do we want to spend on our roads? One of our towns is looking at replacing its original 1903 water lines this year. And so that's going to be a potential $2 million issue that we're seeing. More and more, we're seeing issues on climate change and how to combat that instead of just essentially issues where people are looking at, let's replace this town building. Let's do the roof of this town building. It's let's do that and also update solar panels and let's find space for solar. And let's kind of go throughout the process of, as we're doing all these other things, making room for climate change improvement.
Oh, that's interesting. So are some towns in your area considering changing ordinances around zoning to allow for more solar or other alternative energy projects?
A couple are. Usually what we see are, spending articles when it comes to, essentially spending the money to buy solar to replace the roofs that require it. One of our towns is looking at, it has an old town hall and it's looking at renovating that. And a part of that is spending $2 million to actually install a geothermal system.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So we're seeing more of those. regionally, too. Some of our towns are looking at hiring a regional energy coordinator to kind of look into these issues because some of our towns are more small, and so they can't necessarily hire that one specific person who makes those upgrades or looks into those upgrades for future town meetings.
Speaking of climate, Tim, I also read, just reviewing the issues that before various towns around the state, a lot of them are concerned about water, not just the usual, you know, we need to fix the water treatment plant, but given that we're seeing bigger storms with more sudden surges of water, you know, towns are saying, whoa, we need to improve our culverts. We need to improve our water treatment systems. I wonder what you're seeing.
Yeah, Canaan this year, I think, has a warrant article that's going to address some of its historic flooding. The Upper Valley was hit hard by Irene. And so that's something that we've kind of continually been working on since 2011, how to improve those culverts, how to essentially plan for a better response to some of those incidents as well, too.
Well, a little bit later during the show, we'll talk to an editor who works on the seacoast, and he'll definitely fill us in a little bit more on that issue. But I wonder, Cordell, in Henniker now, are you focusing on this issue of bigger storms, more water, and how to manage it?
That specific issue is not, at least it's not on our warrant per se this year. We do have one of the biggest, well, I guess probably the biggest item on our warrant, apart from the operating budget, is a $3.2 million bond for upgrading making a lot of improvements and updates to the wastewater treatment facility. As Tim mentioned, infrastructure, and I think a lot of towns are going through, it's kind of a stage because a lot of these facilities were built back in the 70s. I think ours is 40 years old, and a lot of them probably should have been, you know, doing the upgrades as over time. But now things are catching up with us, and so that's one of the big things that we have.
Well, speaking of climate, we got an email from Lisa in Newbury who says, a warrant article is being proposed in several New Hampshire towns that would encourage the state to establish a carbon cash back system. She puts in parentheses, New Hampshire resolution to take action on climate pollution, which would charge carbon polluters a fee that would be redistributed to New Hampshire citizens over 18. Lisa says this measure mimics legislation pending in the House of Representatives, which Annie Custer is now sponsoring. A primary objective of this warrant article is to send the message to New Hampshire legislators that citizens care about climate change. Could your moderators discuss? Lisa, I'm so glad you wrote because I did want to ask you all about this. And Tim, you first. I did read that several Upper Valley communities will be discussing this carbon tax or carbon pricing initiative.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't know a whole lot about it. But you know, every year we have a lot of these warrant articles are added, and they're usually sort of at the end of the warrant that you see at town meeting, requesting that the legislature do specific things, asking sort of these broader questions and essentially trying to send messages to the legislature, to the state, saying, hey, this is something our local community really cares a lot about, and please look into this, please address this issue. And that's something we've seen for a very long time on a very wide range of issues.
Even though in some of these instances there may not be anything a particular town can do, they want to make a statement. They want to let state and national lawmakers know that they care about this. What are you hearing about this carbon pricing initiative, Peter? Is it an issue in your town? Is it an issue in some of the surrounding towns?
Well, it appeared on our warrant, yes, but I don't see that it's a major issue. When we discussed it at the deliberative session, there was virtually no comment aside from the proponents of the article. Now, bear in mind, this is towards the end of a 9-hour meeting, so that may have contributed to it.
People's attention is starting to wander.
I think the important takeaway is also that in the town meeting form of government, the town select board, or in the case of the school district, the school board will put these articles on the warrant that they think are important for the town, for the operation of the town. But because of the nature of the way we run town meetings in New Hampshire, citizens can gather and enough signatures to discuss a topic that the select board or the school board did not put on the warrant. And this is a classic example. It's advisory, as you pointed out. It's an advisory kind of article. And if it passes, it sends a message. If it doesn't pass, it sends a different message. But the townspeople can decide that they want to talk about that, and we'll make time at the meeting to talk about it.
Yeah. Cordell, what do you hear?
Yeah, we do have that on our warrant in Henniker. And I know it is on a lot of warrants around the state. And as Pete mentioned, and as you mentioned, Laura, it's advisory. It's not something that the town is actually going to take action, but the idea is to send a message. And I know this is a coordinated campaign, and I believe the idea is the group wants to be able to say, well, 160 towns have passed this resolution, so legislators, you ought to pay attention to what your towns are saying.
Yeah, because towns don't have the right to pass taxes on carbon. They can pass property taxes. That's in their purview, but they couldn't enact
Correct.
A carbon tax.
Correct.
There's another national issue that I think some communities in your region, Tim, are going to be talking about, and that's immigration. Can you fill us in on that?
Yeah, so in four of our towns, Hartford and Norwich on the Vermont side, Lebanon and Hanover on the New Hampshire side, they're going to be discussing what some people are calling the welcoming ordinances. And essentially what that would do is it started in Vermont and kind of shifted throughout the Upper Valley, these discussions. It would prevent local police from asking during a traffic stop or during arrest about somebody's immigration status. And then it would also prevent local police from essentially sharing that information with federal immigration authorities.
Wow. Has that been controversial?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's been very controversial.
What are people saying? Yeah.
Well, I mean, the big criticism of it is actually that our local police aren't doing those things right now. Is Lebanon and a bunch of our local police officers just saying, we really don't need this because this isn't something that we're doing right now. When we pull somebody over, we're really interested about public safety and issuing that ticket or that warning and then kind of moving on. And we really don't want to get it caught up in that. The counter to that is that, well, if it's something that we're doing already, maybe we should just put it in the books and make it more official and move on with it.
Wow.
There have definitely been sort of some legal questions, especially with our two sort of federal court systems. We have, you know, a New Hampshire federal court and Vermont, and sort of how would those two federal courts take up challenges? And so there's been a lot of legal opinions throughout all the towns as to which provisions would actually be legal or not. And it'll be up to the voters, but it'll be interesting.
That's really interesting. And Cordell, you know, we were talking earlier about towns. Typically, you know, they sometimes get involved in these national policy issues. Towns could not impose a carbon tax, but towns can sort of make a statement on immigration and actually have an impact there.
Yeah, I think, and I actually—
In terms of at least how police approach this.
Yeah, I actually had not heard about that being on the agenda for any towns. But yeah, towns certainly can, to some extent, decide what their practices are going to be. And I'm not sure. Tim said there have been a number of legal opinions or legal issues raised about it. I guess I'm not sure exactly what the impact of a town meeting vote on something like that would be, because typically police practices are a matter within the discretion of the police department and the board of selectmen as opposed to the town meeting. So that'd be an interesting issue to figure out exactly what the legal impact of that would be. I'm honestly not sure what it would be.
Well, if some of these pass, we'll have to take another look at it. And Tim, I know we have to let you go. You got to get up to work. But any last issues that you think you'll be covering over the next couple weeks?
I mean, mostly those regional issues regarding climate, especially those issues that sort of are connected. So what if one town adopts a welcoming ordinance and the other towns don't? What if one town votes to accept this regional energy coordinator position and the other towns don't? Sort of how do all these towns interact and what happens after these votes are taken? So
that's interesting because a lot of them are small. So if they go it alone or if they want to go it alone, they may not be able to do that.
Exactly.
So, well, it's really great to see you, Tim. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That's Tim Camerato of the Valley News. He will be covering town meetings in his region this month and probably in May. Some towns also hold their sessions in May, so we'll talk about that after a short break. We'll also go to the seacoast and hear about some of the issues there, including concerns about rising oceans, all of that, plus more of your calls and emails. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. The This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, Town Meeting 2020, what local voters will be deciding this month on items from road repair to climate change. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Tell us what's on the agenda in your town, or if you've never attended your town's meeting or deliberative session, tell us why. What might make you want to come? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Peter Basilier. He's town and school district moderator in Milford. Also, Cordell Johnston. He's the New Hampshire Municipal Association's Government Affairs Council and the town and school district moderator in his town, Henniker. And joining us now by phone, Patrick Cronin, Seacoast editor of the Exeter Newsletter and the Hampton Union. And Patrick, really nice to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, we talked earlier, Patrick, about some of the bread and butter issues that towns typically deal with this time of year. What's standard fare in the towns that you cover, Patrick?
So obviously the most, of our towns, they're going to be voting on their budgets. They're going to be voting on their budgets for the town. They're going to be voting on their budgets for the school. There's also union contracts. There's also, typical warrant articles for capital reserve funds, road improvements, and that such.
And that's probably typical. Everybody listening is nodding, going, yes, yes, I know. What newer items are on the agenda that you haven't seen before, Patrick?
Well, there's a sports betting question that's going to be on the ballot, and that's going to be on Hampton, Seabrook, and in Newmarket. And essentially what that is it's asking voters whether or not they want to allow brick-and-mortar locations for sports betting in their communities.
So right now, sports betting is online. This is kind of like Keno, Patrick. Correct me if I'm wrong. Individual towns get to say yes or no. We want to have your local bar or restaurant allow this. Is that right?
Correct. So House Bill 480, which authorized online sports betting, it obviously launched the online sports betting in December, but it also called for up to 10 retail locations. But in order to participate, a community has to say, yes, we want this in our community.
That's interesting. So who is interested in your region, the Seacoast?
So Hampton and Seabrook both have the article on the question, on the ballot. Hampton is being asked by Ocean Gaming, which is the charitable casino down at Hampton Beach. Seabrook is being asked to put it on the ballot by The Brook, which is the former Greyhound Park, which is the racebook betting place in Seabrook. And they also want to be able to offer it.
How are people... Well, what's your read? I mean, obviously people haven't voted yet, but do you have any sense, Patrick, of how people feel about this in those towns? Does it seem to be a swell of support for them or a swell of opposition?
Well, I certainly think that it's definitely going to be approved in Seabrook. I think Seabrook has, the Greyhound Park or the former Greyhound Park, which is now the Brook, has been a great community partner. They donated $24,000 worth of scholarships for the students in Seabrook. Hampton, I also think there's going to be a lot of support for it because, obviously Hampton Beach is a tourist destination. And I think this is just another avenue or another outlet for tourists to enjoy.
Interesting. Patrick, hold on a second. I do want to ask our other guests about this. And Peter is bricks and mortar sports betting, as Patrick so aptly put it. Is that an issue in your town, in Milford, or surrounding towns?
It's certainly on our warrant, and so the voters will be voting in a week or 10 days for that.
Oh, it's interesting.
So it's entirely possible. I think we have Keno already, so I won't be surprised if we did put our name in the hat to have one of those 10 locations. And as Patrick pointed out, it's a case of the state is still going to decide at the end of the day which 10 sites are actually chosen.
Oh, okay. So Let's say 30 towns all say this year, sure, we'd like to have physical sports betting. Then the legislature says, okay, Hampton, you're a yes, and Milford, you're a no.
I'm not sure whether it's the legislature or a department within the state government that'll implement that, but
I see.
Initially, there's 10.
Okay, so Cordell, putting on your New Hampshire Municipal Association hat, what are you hearing about sports betting?
Not much, actually.
Really?
Yeah. No, I knew that it was on the warrant in some towns, but I don't think it's a widespread thing. I think recognizing that there only are going to be 10 locations, and a lot of towns don't really have an obvious an obvious candidate to have something like that. It's not on the Warren and Henniker, for example. So it's not nearly as widespread as Keno was a couple of years last year and the year before.
Okay. Well, again, you can join us with your questions and comments and let us know what is on the agenda in your town for town meeting this year. And if you just want to understand how this whole process works, if you're curious about it, or if you need specific information about how SB 2 works versus traditional town meeting, we'd love to hear from you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, let's go to the phones. And Tim is calling from Mount Vernon. Hi, Tim. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm getting feedback. Can you hear me? All right, so you've got the moderator from Milford, and I'm the selectman from Mount Vernon. So I could say a little bit about what's going on. I don't think you've mentioned it yet, but the last warrant article that we have, Article 12, is the New Hampshire Resolution for Fair Redistricting. And I don't know how popular that is, and I don't know how popular it will be. I know that people don't think of, we don't think of our state as having a problem with gerrymandering, which is what this article, this petition addresses. So I don't know how well it's going to be received. And then we just have the usual problem, the poll. And I mean, you've done a lot of shows about it, but it's worth mentioning that there's a poll. We have a conventional town meeting, an old-fashioned town meeting in Mount Vernon, but the school is not handled in that department. And in our town, the school budget is it is more than twice the municipal budget, and it's only the municipal budget that we get to fight it out at town meeting or like they do in Milford at the deliberative session. And the school board, you get a mailer in the mail, just came Saturday, and it's got a sample ballot, and it's got the facts and figures, and if you didn't go to the school board deliberative session, you get no involvement at all. And then also bears mentioning, part of the process,
yeah,
all winter long, we're talking about the budget, and then we have meetings before the town meeting where the townsfolk get to come to a public hearing and pick
Tim,
apart the budget.
Wow, Tim, really complicated.
And it's quite a process.
I'm really glad you called, and there's a lot to pull apart there. Tim, thank you so much. First of all, the easy one, there is another sort of national issue on the warrant or on the agenda in some towns in New Hampshire this year. And Cordell, it's this idea of making a statement on fair redistricting. So what is that about?
Well, actually, the first thing I'd like to mention is the caller mentioned that it was the last article. He said Article 12 on their warrant. I'm impressed that they only have 12 articles on their warrant. I'm a little envious. I think we have about 40 on ours. But that is in the warrant in Henniker as well. And again, it's I think sort of like the carbon tax issue.
It's a statement.
Yeah, it's a statement. It's not something that the town can do anything about, but it's an organized effort to be able to tell legislators your towns want you to do something about this. And the issue is that every 10 years after the census, it is up to the legislature to draw the legislative districts. And there is a concern, and it's not just a concern, it's a fact, more or less depending on what state you're in, that the party in power has a tendency to draw those districts to favor the party that's in power. And the effort is to there have been different proposals across the country, but in New Hampshire there have been several bills in the legislature to create an independent redistricting commission, which would be appointed by the legislature, but it would be bipartisan. It would be equally balanced.
Right. This is a trend nationally, and this is an attempt for towns to say, hey, we think this is a good idea. So that's the easy answer.
Right.
Now the complicated stuff, and I'm so glad that he called because this is really important. I want to get everybody in on this, but you first, Peter, please. So he said, correct me if I'm wrong, that the town budget, fire, police, town hall, whatever, is decided in that traditional meeting in his town, Mount Vernon. But school issues are what sounds like SB2 setup. So there's that deliberative session back in January, and then he just got a notice in the mail and he has to go vote later this month. So, wow, two different forms of governance in one not that big town.
No, and there are a handful of towns, communities like that. In the case of Mount Vernon, I believe the reason that they're in a SB2 is because they have a cooperative school district with the town of Amherst.
I see.
And that governing body, that regional governing body, chose to go with SB2. And that's the reason why Mount Vernon in this particular case is like that.
Interesting.
But it is entirely possible, particularly when you have regional governments, which typically are the schools, and for them to have one form of government and certainly a different meeting from the town meeting itself.
Well, and I got to bring you in, Patrick. Now, some of the towns in your area, the Seacoast, are a bit bigger, so they might not be involved in some of these cooperative districts, but I know some of them are. So what's the picture in your area on the Seacoast in terms of towns that have a mix of traditional meeting and SB2?
Yeah, so the majority of the towns in our coverage area are SB2. We do have two towns that do the traditional town meeting, and that is Stratum, and that is also Brentwood. And obviously Stratum is also part of the co-op, so they do vote on the cooperative school district budget, which is SB2.
And just remind us how the school budget is done separately in these towns and whether participation is higher or lower, Patrick, for the school item on the agenda, so to speak.
The school budget, it depends on the issue.
If it's
a big project on the ballot, it's certainly going to draw a crowd. This year, there really is, other than the budget, there really isn't anything that's, super exciting.
People just won't turn out if there's nothing super
exciting.
So people
won't turn out.
Yeah.
Correct.
By the way, Cordell, how can people find out, what kind of town their town is, the dates if they want to attend? It is complicated. Every time we have this conversation, I sometimes think, wow, I'm glad I live in Concord and I don't have to figure it out. I know people who love town meeting, but it is complicated. How can people learn more?
Well, I guess ideally you'll have that information on your town website. the first thing that people should know is if you're in a town, and there are a few exceptions to this, but the official town meeting day is always the second Tuesday in March. As I say, there are a few exceptions to that. But setting those few exceptions aside, the official town meeting day is the second Tuesday in March. That's the day when you will go and vote for your town officers and vote on zoning amendments and a few other things. Depending on whether you're in a traditional town meeting town like Henniker, if you are, then the business session is a few days later. If you want to know when that is, I think probably the best thing to do is go to a selectman's meeting and ask your selectman. Or if you have a town administrator, town manager, ask that person or the town clerk. I mean, any town official will know when those meetings are.
So it sounds like, Peter, that in some towns, it isn't just one big day. You described that 9-hour meeting. It's a couple different touch points where you have to participate.
Yes, that's and there are opportunities to participate, absolutely.
And how excited are people these days to take those opportunities?
Well, in Milford's case, we've had quite a bit of interest in the schools for the last year. We've had quite a number of issues that have been brought up over the course of the past year. So our school deliberative session was very well attended. We also have a $43 million budget for the schools, more than the $43 million budget. So that in and of itself will bring people out. On the town side, we have 40 articles because there are so many more things that happen within the town government's purview. Everything from fire and safety, police to DPW and the welfare office and so forth. So there's tremendous number of issues, but unfortunately, the attendance at a deliberative session tends to be relatively low. A small portion of the population. We have now 12,053 voters. voters and registered voters in Milford, and we had about 150 that show up for the town deliberative session.
Wow.
And
that's pretty grim.
It is grim. It also means that people who are really interested show. So they're residents, and otherwise they can't participate. They could be there, but they can't participate. So they're residents. Certainly, they're experts. There are people that are employees of the town, but they're also a wide range of very interested residents. And the important thing for listeners to take away is that the deliberative session is not a rubber stamp of the select board or the school board's warrant, not by any stretch. Last year, we changed in Milford, we changed a warrant article to upgrade our communications center to a study to do that. This year, we modified a petition on a warrant article on the that same topic from, I think it was $1.6 million to almost $6 million for the cost of that warrant article. And those 150 people or thereabouts that came and participated in the deliberative session made significant changes to what the voters can act on next week.
So a small number of people can have a huge impact on the future of your town.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's a message for others to attend, but it's hard for people to attend that nine-hour session. I don't think I would go to a nine-hour session.
You certainly don't go in knowing that it's a nine-hour session. And yes, absolutely. But that's the nature of this participatory democracy that we have. People are entitled to speak. And if we have a lot of articles on the warrant and they're passionate articles, in our case this year is the library as well as the communications center, people want to talk about it.
I want to bring in another voice. Here's an email from Margaret, and this has to do with participation. So, Margaret, thank you for writing. She says, as a summer resident of Sandwich, I wish I could participate via online access. My town has a summer meeting, but it's purely informational, almost ceremonial. Are any towns providing online access? Streaming the meeting on Facebook Live, for example. That's one example I can think of. What do you think, Cordell? And I'm guessing people couldn't actually vote online because it would be hard to verify that they actually lived in the town.
Right. I don't know whether there are towns. Maybe Milford does where you actually stream the meeting, but you cannot vote unless you're there in person. And I guess
what about elderly people who can't get out?
Well, let me go back to what I said at the beginning. Remember that what we're talking about is the town's legislative body. And you said a minute ago that 160 people in Milford, that's pretty grim. That's a small number. Keep in mind, if you live in Concord, all those decisions are being made by 15 people, your city council. So if you have 160 people in Milford, that's actually not so—
I feel you pushing back on that a little bit.
I mean, in Henniker, we have 4,000 registered voters, and about 200 people come to town meeting. So that's about 5%. 15 people out of 45,000 in Concord is like a fraction of 1%.
So I don't sure, really think but that's we so voted bad. For them.
That's true. If you want to be part of the legislative body in your town, you just have to vote for yourself and go to the town meeting.
All right. Well, Patrick, coming up in a few minutes, I want to ask you more about concerns on the seacoast over rising sea levels and how some towns are discussing that in town meeting. I've also got a couple comments on Facebook and emails, people jumping in with what's on the agenda in their towns. Let us know what's happening in your community in just a moment. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org.
From the seacoast to the Upper Valley, Monadnock to the Great North Woods, NHPR covers the stories that impact your community to help you stay connected to what's happening in every corner of the state. I'm Annie Ropeek, a reporter here at NHPR, and when you give $10 a month as a sustainer, you'll help support a vital resource that is statewide, regional, and deeply New Hampshire. Give today at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, what's on tap for town meetings this month? and those communities who will vote later in the spring. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Cordell Johnston is in studio. He's town and school district moderator in Henniker, along with Peter Basilier, town and school district moderator in Milford. And on the phone is Patrick Cronin, Seacoast editor of the Exeter Newsletter and the Hampton Union. And Patrick, how are towns in your area talking about concerns over rising sea levels and what they want to do about that?
Yeah, so flooding is, you know, it's been a huge issue down at Hampton Beach, and it just seems to be getting worse. So there's two different articles that are going to be on the ballot. One is for $200,000, and that's essentially to design flood controls for the West Side streets. And those are the streets off of Ashworth Avenue. So anytime you see a big, you know, storm or nor'easter, that's usually where WMUR will set up their crews, and you'll see a lot of flooding and all those homes kind of a little bit, you know, with cars underwater. So that article will be on the ballot. There's also another article, which is for $50,000, and this will allow the town to work with the Rockingham Planning Commission. And this will help the town essentially be able to apply for FEMA hazard mitigation grants.
That's interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah. So these grants, so the only way, you know, a property owner can apply for these grants is if they work through the town. And now, essentially, these grants will allow them to help, you know, fund to elevate their structures. And also, in some cases, if they need to sell their property because of, you know, the flooding issue. So that's what that grant is for.
Interesting. And also, Patrick, given that, you know, some of these towns may have small populations, what are some of the ethics of these meetings, you know, where people may work together and know each other and have longstanding relationships, some of them good and some of them not so good? So how do the towns that you've covered, Patrick, sort of work through the politics or ethics of town meeting?
Well, you know, I think one great example is what occurred in Northampton this year. Going into the deliberative session, there was dueling warrant articles. The selectmen wanted to build a new library on the Homestead property. The library trustees wanted to expand their library, their current facility. They couldn't agree. There were threats of, you know, litigation from the library trustees to the selectmen, essentially saying that the selectmen were overstepping their authority. So when we came to deliberative session, you know, the voters essentially did what the selectmen and the library trustees couldn't do, which is come to a compromise.
Okay.
So they put forward a $3.9 million project. So they'll be building a new library on the Homestead property, but it'll be under the supervision of the library trustees, who will be able to pick the design and also design what they want to see. So that was just a great show of, you know, A, the power of deliberative session, especially when your political leaders do not agree.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I'm glad you gave that example, Patrick, because I got an email from Paul in Moultonboro, who is the town and school district moderator for Moultonboro. And he says, we have a very contentious issue on the warrant for our Saturday, May 14th meeting. And in a couple of minutes, I'd like to ask Cordell, maybe you, why some towns vote in May. But Paul says the issue of a community center has been at the center of a divided community since 2007. Wow. Various iterations have been on the warrant over the years with conflicting votes. But here we are, he says, in 2020 with no resolution. This year, he says, we have not one but two bonds for a community center. Sounds like kind of what you just talked about, Patrick. One put forth by the selectmen and one by citizen petition. Each is for a different location. The selectmen bond is to rebuild a town-owned former Lions Club to not include a gym, while the citizens petition is for a bond to construct a full-blown community center with a gym at a different location on town and school property. Paul says, I'm expecting a huge turnout and some very spirited debate. And Paul, thank you for your service to local government, by the way. And do you see this a lot in your town, Peter, the idea that there's competing warrants and people just have to kind of figure it out?
Well, this year, actually, we have that. It's atypical, but when there's a hot-button topic, that happens. So in our case in Milford, we have presently a regional communications center that supports police and fire. And it supports two other towns. We have a governing agreement with two other towns. So this year, the select board put an article on the warrant as a result of the study that was, you know, the voters decided on last year. And there were a group of people in town who felt that it was a better, different solution. And so they submitted a petition warrant article. And so unlike in a town meeting format where you can manage that and the entire body can decide on one or the other, because we're going to the ballot in next week, voters have to make a very clear decision between the two. And it's critically important because they're bond issues, just as the situation in Moultonboro, because there's a higher hurdle for approving a bond issue. And when there are competing items on the same
because
topic.
Because bonds put the town in debt, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. So you need a 60% majority for the bond. And if you have two bond issues on the same topic, there's always a concern that neither one will surmount the 60% hurdle because of the passion and support for the competing options.
You know what also is interesting to me, Cordell, about Paul's email is one of you mentioned earlier that the selectmen, you know, they're making suggestions, but they don't have the final say. It really is the people.
Right.
So in this instance, in Paul's town, Moultonboro, the selectmen had this one plan and the citizens had a sort of bigger plan.
Right. And actually, Peter mentioned the problem that maybe neither one of them passes. There's another possible problem, which is that both of them pass.
Uh-oh.
And that I suppose that's unlikely with a bond issue. And I've never seen this kind of competing issue in a town meeting, but it's not unusual to have competing warrant articles. And occasionally, I can remember in our town a few years ago, competing warrant articles dealing with zoning amendments, and they both passed. And so the town had passed two different zoning amendments dealing with exactly the same subject. That's when you get the town lawyer involved.
Okay, right. Well, let's take another call. This is John in Windham. And go ahead, John, you're in the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Your listeners may be interested in hearing about a New Hampshire petitioned warrant article that a group called the Carbon Cashback Coalition was able to work with local citizens and get into 35 New Hampshire town elections. The resolution is called, it's a resolution to take action on climate pollution. And we learned a lot about the differences in different towns and the difference between towns and cities in trying to do this kind of thing.
Sure. Well, and cities are a completely different form of governance. So is this on the agenda in your town, John?
Yes, I'm from Windham, and it is. It'll be warrant article number 24. So this is just a grassroots effort of a bunch of people in New Hampshire that are worried about climate change. We came up with a standard warrant text and put it on a website, carboncashback.org. So anybody from any town can go to the website, join to represent their town, download the template of the document, print it out, collect 25 signatures, and turn it in on the deadline. The deadline for most towns is passed now. So we did get 81 towns involved, but we started right before the deadline started happening. So we were able to get 35 warrant articles, and next year we plan to do 200 towns.
All right. Well, John, it's good to hear from you. We did talk about this earlier in the show. Every year we do see a couple sort of national concerns put on the warrant in towns, and this is one of them. This year. Let's take another call. This is Melissa from Effingham. Hi, Melissa. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Wonderful program.
Good.
Have been following town meeting, and there are a lot of us who want to preserve the traditional town meeting and don't want to move to SB2, but we find that fewer and fewer people are informed and show up on town meetings. So the same people tend to decide what our annual path forward is. So I would just like to commend those organizations, the nonprofits, and some towns as well that do a really excellent job of promoting town meeting ahead of it through offering videos, educational pamphlets, brochures, and so forth. I think we have a duty to inform the voters and really build an excitement around this annual tradition.
Melissa, I am so glad you called. Yeah, thank you, because I want to ask our two moderators on the panel, and maybe you too, Patrick, what efforts, Cordell, do you see towns making to inform people and, as Melissa said, sort of rally people? Because the complexity of how this rolls out sometimes might be a turnoff. Our earlier caller mentioned people miss deadlines. So just what are you guys doing to better inform folks?
Well, I think, at least in theory, it should be a lot easier to inform people now than it was, say, 30 or 40 years ago with social media. And I do see, I know my town, there are several unofficial Facebook pages in which people let everyone know that town meeting is coming up. So if people don't know, it's probably because they're not paying attention. There's most towns, or at least many towns, also have an official Facebook page, which lets people know what the important dates are and when things are coming up. If you don't pay attention to Facebook, then I suppose that doesn't help. But there are a number of different outlets to find out that information. So I think it's easier now to find it out than it used to be. And if people still aren't going, then maybe they're just not all that interested. And that's unfortunate, but that may be the situation.
Peter, what do you think?
Well, and yes, we can take advantage of social media, absolutely. But we also use other more traditional media, the print media. Certainly the town or school district websites promote it. We have some signage around town. But I think one of what the woman was saying also is that there needs to be an excitement. And that's, I think, part of what we're missing is, you know, for many of us, it's an obligation. It's not an excitement. And I think one of the highlights of the day is being able to have, you know, sit down at the lunch break and, you know, support a local nonprofit and have conversations with people who are present.
Because local nonprofits, like the Girl Scouts, will often sell sandwiches or chili
And so it's a nice way to take a break, a nice way to interact with you. It's kind of, in many respects, like going to the polls. You know, if you don't vote in person at the polls, you miss out on the community aspect. Yes, you're more efficient, and yes, you don't have to park and wait in lines for the polls. But on the other hand, you interact with a whole lot of people in your community. And that's one of the things that we think we're trying to preserve with both the town meeting and the SB2 meeting formats.
What do Seacoast towns that you cover, Patrick, do to, as Melissa put it, rally people, get people excited to go to town meeting?
Yeah, so there's a lot of Facebook groups. Social media has been playing a big role, especially this year. They've been streaming, so they have on-demand videos so you can watch the deliberative session. Exeter has a communications committee, and what they do is they put out summaries of each of the Warren articles just to let people know who might not have attended the deliberative session, you know, what is on the ballot. We also have a lot of citizen groups that take part. In Hampton, we have the Rational Taxpayers of Hampton, and they put out a voter guide, and we have different groups like that. So the information is getting out there.
So different groups talk to their constituencies and, you know, never downplay the importance of selling Girl Scout cookies and things like that at town meeting. Yeah. Go ahead, Peter.
That's an important point, too, because when you go to an SB2 meeting or to the town meeting, particularly the town meeting, you get to hear proponents and advocates and opponents on every topic. And I recall when we used to have the town meeting in Milford, going to into a meeting and listening to someone very persuasive make a case for what I had not wanted to do in the first place. In other words, they changed my mind. And I think that's what is critically important about SB2 and town meeting is that you go and you listen and you can make up your own mind in that moment.
An earlier caller talked about the carbon tax proposal or sentiment that is on the ballot, and he said, I think, 35 towns this year. We got also an email from Karen, who's a city councilor in Lebanon, who wants to talk about that welcoming cities warrant item that Tim Camerato mentioned earlier in the Upper Valley. Karen says, one provision in the ordinance on the Lebanon ballot that has been identified as problematic is a requirement for the city to use all available means to inform the public when federal immigration officials are in town. City Attorney Bernie Waugh has identified this as being vague and unenforceable, Karen says. Another major legal issue is around whether cities or towns that adopt these ordinances will lose access to federal funding. A decision in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals just last week suggests that the federal government will be able to cut federal funding to communities that adopt these ordinances. In some cities and towns, this could be a significant issue with impacts to local property taxpayers. So there we have Karen in Lebanon talking about some of the concerns that she sees around these welcoming cities initiatives. Charles on Facebook wrote us a note. He says, Charlestown wants to withdraw from the Fall Mountain Regional District, throwing major cost increases on the other member towns. Boy, that's a whole show we could do. That's a giant issue. I'm really glad you wrote, Charles. Cordell, just briefly, can you sort of explain to people who might not quite understand why that's such a big deal, someone wanting to break away from one of these regional school districts?
Well, it's a big issue. It's a big issue in the same way that forming a regional school district is a big issue in the first place. I mean, the idea behind forming such a district typically is it's a way to save money, to combine, you know, combine resources so that you have, you know, typically one high school rather than several little high schools. But sometimes one town will end up feeling that it's paying more than its fair share. And it's come up. I'm in Henniker. We're part of the John Stark Regional District, and there have been times when our town has thought that they're paying more than their fair share. But there's a process to get out of a regional school district. It's complicated. It's a big deal, and if it happens, you know, it's like blowing up a family. It can create a mess, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be done, but it's something that needs to be approached very carefully.
And last question also to you, Cordell, again, in your role as Government Affairs Counsel for the New Hampshire Municipal Association. Who's going to fill the slots of town moderators like you, like Peter, select board members, all these roles, which I think are largely volunteer, as older generations, you know, retire from these positions? Who's going to jump in and take over as town moderator and select board member and so forth?
Boy, that's a good question. I mean, we're just going to have to keep working to get people interested. I resisted being the school district moderator in Henniker for quite a while, and they just couldn't find anyone, so I finally agreed that I would do it. It does seem to be getting harder and harder, and we're just going to have to keep I think maybe civics education in the high school, talking about local government would be is one way to do it, but just need to keep working to get people to understand the importance and stay interested.
All right. Well, Patrick Cronin on the Seacoast, it was really good to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Patrick. Thank you.
Patrick Cronin is Seacoast editor of the Exeter Newsletter and the Hampton Union. Cordell Johnson, great to see you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Peter Basilier, it was good to see you too. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.